In just a minute, Ted's going to lead us in a song, We Have an Anchor. And before we do that, I want to think about our anchor. You know, we're going through changes, aren't we? I remember when I moved to Alaska. We moved away from my folks, and we moved to an entirely different environment. And all of the traditions and the things that happened around the holidays that we so much enjoyed when we were living close to my folks and Kim's folks, all of those things suddenly depended on me. And it was like, you know, I've said before, it's kind of like when you become the home that people come back to at the holidays. That's a big change. It's comforting to be able to go back home and to participate in a lot of transitions. It's hard when you're home and you're not the participant in those activities and those traditions. You're the one that makes those traditions. I was reading a book just this last week. It's called Halftime. I got the book. I was thumbing through some material that was suggested, and I thought, oh, I'm going to learn about the halftime accommodations and changes that a football team makes so that they can be effective. That's not it. It's Moving from Success to Significance. It's a book by Bob Buford. I don't know him, but it's an interesting book. He starts with the theory that your midlife doesn't have to be a crisis. In the first half of your life, you're striving for success, but in the second half of your life, you start thinking about significance. And this is a book about the halftime adjustments that you need to be making as you move through life, as you stop being the people that go home for Christmas and become the people that people come home to for Christmas. There's a lot to think about. He, in the context of this book, he makes a couple of really interesting observations. And I think they're the kind of observations that we've all made one time or another. People need to see our faith, not just hear about it. When our beliefs are personal and they're privatized, when they're practiced only inside the building one day a week, we as Christians miss out on the glorious opportunity to be salt and light in the world. We miss out on the ability to make our traditions. Worse, he says, I believe that when faith continues to be directed inward, we become one-dimensional, uninteresting, and wholly self-centered people. And that's what happens when we keep our faith to ourselves. And the only time that we openly proclaim our faith is when we're in the confines of this building. He said, the business of faith is to convert truth into reality. And I think that's a really meaningful statement. The business of faith, what we ought to be about, is learning how to convert truth, which is, of course, contained in the Bible. This is truth. It's everything that God says. It's true. And we have to convert that into reality in our life. Think about the way that the Apostle Paul talks about faith in the book of Thessalonians, of the letters that were written to the Thessalonians. And think about the number of times that Paul talks about your faith. Now, just think back for a minute as you grew up in your household. If you had parents that were Christians, you kind of participated in faith, but it was their faith. They were the ones that said we're going to go to church on Sunday. They were the ones who said that we're going to read our Bibles. They were the ones who said we're going to pray and we're going to thank God for our dinners. You didn't really have a choice in the matter. And then you grew up and you established your family. And now somebody is relying on you to make that change and to have your faith, not your parents' faith. It might be the same, but it's your faith now. 1 Thessalonians, the first chapter, verse 8. Paul said to the Thessalonians, your faith has become known everywhere. Remember, Paul is traveling throughout the world, and everywhere he goes, he hears people talking about the Thessalonians. Your faith has become known everywhere. He left Timothy in Thessalonica so that Timothy could, as he says it in 1 Thessalonians 3:2, so he could strengthen and encourage you in your faith. Now, and most of the time we think about the faith, or we think about the church's faith, or we think about our parents' faith. This is not any of those. It's your faith. And he says in verse 5 of 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 that Satan is going to try to unsettle and destroy your faith. Not the faith, your faith. That's what Satan's after. And he was encouraged by the good news concerning your faith. And he wanted to supply whatever was lacking in your faith. 1 Thessalonians 3 and verses 6 and 7. Now notice the way he kind of summarized this in 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. This is from the New International Translation. He says, we ought always to thank God for you, brothers and sisters, and rightly so, because your faith is growing more and more. And because the love all of you have for one another is increasing. It was your faith and it was your love that the apostle is so concerned about. So among God's churches, we boast about your perseverance and faith in all the persecutions and trials that you're enduring. I used to look at my dad and marvel that he was able to withstand as many difficulties as he faced. He was a Christian, was an elder in God's church, and he worked outside of the confines of the church. He was the controller for Standard Pacific Corporation, big diversified builder in Southern California. And they, because he was at the executive level, he was expected to attend a lot of functions that were a part of being bankers. The thing that he told me that surprised me was when they would start planning one of these big banquet activities, they would start ordering booze, and they always stored it in his office. And that kind of surprised me. They said, the reason we stored in your office is we know you're the only one around here that won't drink it before we get to the banquet. He was in a position where he knew where, quote unquote, all the bodies are buried. You know, anytime you deal with the finances of a major corporation like that, you know what they have done that was a little bit shady in the past. You may not have participated in it, but you know about what that was. And they were always comfortable with him knowing, because they knew that he wasn't going to lie, that he wasn't going to beat somebody over the head with it, because they knew him. And like Buford said, you spend the first half of your life trying to be a success, and you spend the second half of your life trying to figure out how you can be a person of significance. How you can be the kind of person that other people will remember. One of the things that he suggests that we do as a halftime activity is you sit down and you write out your own epitaph. Write out the eulogy that someone would be able to present concerning your life. And you know, it's faith that brings those two parts of life together, that holds them together, that makes you one kind of person. This faith that we have has to be personal. Just like sin, sin's not inherited from your parents, and faith won't be inherited from your parents. Faith has to be our own. It has to be our belief. You're not going to hang all of those stockings on the mantle because that's what your mom always did. You'll hang them because they mean something to you. Faith has to be informed by your knowledge of the Bible, not by somebody else's. It must be your own conviction. If it's not your own conviction, when you move away from what used to be home, it won't mean anything to you. Faith works. You know, faith without informed behavior is dead. That's what James said in the first chapter. He said, we need to be people who work our faith, who take truth and turn it into reality. Faith does the work that God has described for us. Ephesians, the second chapter, a passage that we've been repeating over and over and over again. We are created in Christ to do the works that God before ordained. God has things he wants us to do, and we need to be people that do them. That's what my faith is. It would be nice if I could get into heaven because of the good work that Tim does. because she's very adept at doing good. But I'm not. It has to be me that works. Faith is evidenced everywhere. It's in our home. It's in our business. It's in our community. It's in our schools. It's in our social media posts. The principles and practices of my faith cannot be confined to the walls of this building. They have to go outside of it. And it has to be my faith. And it's not static. It matures. It grows. If you are no more mature today in your faith than you were 10 years ago, something is seriously wrong. Faith has to develop. Growth from exercise and good food from God's word is how faith grows. The writer of the book of Hebrews said, strong meat belongs to them who are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern good and evil. We have to be out there doing in order to find the way to grow. And we don't grow sometimes because we don't exercise. What happens to your physical body when you don't exercise? You get a dead body that looks like mine. I wish I was built like Mark is, but I'm not, because I don't work at it. And that's the way faith is. Our faith, the faith that we have, is the faith that we use to lift the spirits of the discouraged. If we don't have the faith, we can't do that. It enlivens the lethargic ones. That's why the writer of the book of Hebrews said, consider Jesus, the author and finisher of your faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despised the shame, is now set down at the right hand of the throne of God. He also said, consider that you're compassed about, that you're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. And he concludes, he says, lift up the feeble knees. That's what it takes. And it encourages believers to remain strong. Sometimes everybody needs to sit down in the shade of another person for just a minute. I don't care who it is. Every one of us needs to sit in somebody else's shade once in a while. We can reassure the doubting, but only if we've developed our faith to the point that we are sure of what we believe. And we can challenge the faithful to greater service. We spent the last week in our class on bearing fruit for the Lord, talking about how when we bear fruit, God prunes us so we can bear more fruit. We're not talking about God chastening those people that don't bear fruit, that he cuts off. Jesus said, if you bear no fruit, then you're cut off, you're just burned, you have no value. It's when you bear fruit. Jesus expects you to be pruned so that you can bear more fruit. And we talked about a lot about what that might mean, what that might look like. Jesus pruning you. Your faith testifies to an unbelieving world. God is real. The Bible is true. And Christianity is what truth does when it interacts with an individual. It's practical. Your faith is salt that impacts a corrupt culture. Yes, culture is corrupt. Your faith, my faith, can change that. We're going to sing a song together that Ted has selected. We have an anchor. We have a personal anchor that helps us move from the first half of life to the second half of life. And it's not moving through chaos. It's not moving through buying a sports car. It's something constant. Now, if you don't have that, then the changes in the stages of life were very difficult to navigate. We want you to have it. We want to help you to have it. Put on Christ. He is the one who is your anchor. He will guide you as you make these changes. Let him be your Lord. Let him put you to death and create a new creature. And if you falter, if your faith is weakened, if Satan has managed to unsettle you, then return to God. Pray and ask for his forgiveness. He's promised he would forgive. But think about how much that anchor means to you.